He is literally the quadruple threat who's called hoops, hockey, baseball, football. We know him as the man who's called so many Oregon football and men's basketball games. You can follow along on Twitter. The handle is at Roxy Bernstein. Roxy, how are you and your family doing during these most trying times?
Well, Steve, we're managing, you know, just like everybody else. Most importantly, we're healthy. And you know what? Frankly, you know, I could say this. We're probably doing better than most just because the situation we're in, we're in an area where it's pretty quiet. We can get out, walk around without having to deal with a lot of things. So it is... been obviously tough because I haven't really worked in about a little over 3 months, but we're managing, and you know, you got to look for silver linings, and I've spent more time with my kids. I've been home for the longest stretch I've ever been in my life, at least my adult life, so I guess you got to try to look for the positives, and that's what I've been doing.
And I think you found it. So along those lines, Sunday, of course, was Father's Day. You're the father of two. You got to share the story because clearly your wife and kids have an amazing sense of humor. And we all know you're sometimes partner on basketball podcasts, the man who sometimes makes my wife say, "I can't," and leave for the other room. So, Roxy, let the folks know the incredible and unique gift your family got you this past weekend.
That was great. My wife has been working on it for a long time, actually. They got me an autographed Bill Walton jersey from his UCLA days with the not only the Bill Walton Hall of Fame 1993 signature, but "Thanks, Roxy, for my life, Bill Walton." And look, he torments us on the air. It's certainly always a struggle, but I love it. And I love being around him. He's so great. And this was a great gift. And Bill and his lovely wife, Lori, were in on making this happen and getting it done. So really was a wonderful gift for my wife and kids. And certainly maybe the best, you know, it is the best Father's Day present I've ever gotten. It was really neat to get this.
Hey, you know the history of the game, a 32 UCLA jersey. I mean,
exactly.
You don't get much better than that.
And let's face it. I mean, I know, look, ESPN did that recent vote for the best college basketball player. They had, you know, a way of determining it. And even though that is my employer, I strongly disagree with who they ended up choosing. Not saying that Michael Jordan isn't a great player, and he was, but Michael Jordan, during his freshman season, wasn't even the best player on his own team.
Right.
So how do you make him the greatest college basketball player ever? And you can make the argument, and look, I'm not really old enough to have seen Bill at UCLA or saw Kareem / Lew Alcindor play. If you go on, okay, Kareem was a three-time national player of the year, a three-time champion. Maybe you give him the edge, but it's certainly 1-2 between Kareem and Bill Walton as the top two college basketball players ever. And if you want to throw, as distinguished as a college career has been, Christian Laettner has to be in the conversation as well.
Well, anybody could tell you who's been listening to me for years, I said the one of the few obvious things in sports is the trifecta of the greatest college basketball players goes Kareem, Walton, Laettner. So I'll back that up forever.
Yeah.
And I am old enough to have seen them.
And I deferred to my uncle, saw them both play, and he's a retired doctor now. But he was doing his residency at UCLA when Bill was playing there. And he says, look, Kareem was unbelievable. Kareem was great. But Bill was the best college basketball player I ever saw. And he saw Kareem play for UCLA also. It's, look, who goes 21 for 22 from the floor in a Final Four game? And the thing that rings, at least with him, and I've only seen video of this, but the way that Bill could grab a rebound and throw an outlet pass, we have never seen anybody be able to do it at the level that Bill did it. Not just at UCLA, but when he was healthy in the NBA.
No, that's one of the things I try and explain to people, that oh my God, if he would have been healthy. I mean, the guy still won two titles, Sixth Man of the Year, the Celtics, led the Blazers to a title, and yet, because of his foot injuries, we never got to see him at full capacity. So we are on the same page there. Kareem, Walton, Leighton are the trifecta of the greatest college players ever.
It was maddening. Look, Michael Jordan's probably the best NBA player ever.
Sure.
But to be the best college player, come on. He wasn't even the best player. James Worthy was the best player on his team their freshman year.
Oh, yeah. Big game James.
Mm-hmm.
I talked with Roxy Bernstein. I got to get to some baseball. So if my math is correct, you were either just born or way too young for the original A's dynasty of Reggie and Rudy and Catfish. But as the Bash brothers emerged, I would imagine you were around in high school. And I always love to get firsthand accounts, being a Bay Area guy. Now you call games for the A's. What do you remember about getting to watch that team day in, day out?
That was an incredible collection that, you know, Sandy Alderson and the Haas family put together. And when they added Ricky Henderson in 89, the team just absolutely took off. And it was amazing to watch that group. And I wasn't old enough, the 72, 73, 74 A's, to see them win those three in a row. But let's face it, that A's team should have won three in a row, 88, 89 and 90.
Right.
88, they lose the dramatic, you know, game one to Kirk Gibson and the Dodgers and never really recovered from it and lost the series as a huge favorite to LA 4-1. And in the 1990s, stunningly, were swept by the Cincinnati Reds, who weren't the team the A's were, but they were hot at the right time and found a way to win it. But you look at not just, okay, the Bash brothers and Ricky, but Terry Steinbach was a tremendous catcher. Carney Lansford, Dave Henderson.
Oh, yeah.
Dennis Eckersley closing it out in the bullpen. Dave Stewart as good as any big game pitcher the game has ever seen. Bob Welch, Mike Moore, who had some great years with the A's. Storm Davis won a lot of games. Kurt Young. Those were some amazing teams to watch.
You know, quite often people in this business grow up as fans, and you're from a certain area, like, you know, if I was doing this in New York right now, but very few end up covering or doing play-by-play for a franchise or a program that they grew up loving. Do you have memories of, or vivid memories of calling your first A's game? Because I'd imagine that's one of those childhood dreams, it's really happening.
Yeah, it was, you know, when they brought me aboard. And I still, you know, in the same role where I'm doing about 30 games a year for
right.
them. And so it was in the 2012 season, and it was terrific just to be around the ball club. And here's a great little anecdote for you, and just, you know, goes into my Cal connection as well. So I'm on my first road trip with the A's. We're interleague series in Milwaukee to start it off, and then we finish up on the south side of Chicago against the White Sox. 7-game road trip. 3 in Milwaukee, 4 in Chicago. And the A's won the first game of the series, you know, in Milwaukee, and we get done, you know, up at the post-game show, and you go down to the clubhouse, pop in on our way out to the bus to head back to the hotel. And I really didn't know Bob Melvin at all. I mean, a little bit casually, you know. But, and then, so I'm standing in the clubhouse, he pokes his head out of his office there in the visiting clubhouse in Milwaukee. And I'm standing with my partner, Vince Catronio, and Bob motions over toward, like, the two of us. And so I'm like, okay, he probably just wants to talk to Vince, I'm just hanging there. So Vince starts moving toward, you know, to the manager's office, and he just waves off Vince, no, send my Cal guy over. And so he sits me down in his office, gives me a beer, and we just shot the breeze for the next 20 minutes, half hour, and we hit it off, and Bob and I have been close friends ever since. And that was a big moment for me, welcoming into the team and the franchise by the manager, and that Cal connection that we have. and it was really cool. And Bob and I pretty much, we're texting almost every day right now, trying to figure out what exactly is happening and when we're going to have some baseball.
Yeah, and that 2012 season marked their return to the playoffs that they hadn't been for a while, if memory serves me correctly.
Yeah, and, you know, Bob came in, he replaced Bob Guerin in 2011, and not much was expected from the A's in 2012, and out of nowhere, they surge and find a way to win the division on the last day of the season, an unforgettable game at the Coliseum against the Rangers.
Yeah, you know, being here, a lot of transplants. So, especially for the people who don't like the Yankees, when the A's or another team succeeds, I hear about it. So, Roxy, we hear now the pieces are in place for this season, and you know, whether it was the Cardinals owner Bill DeWitt or Ricketts of the Cubs talking about zero-sum game or limited profits, and I'm not saying the union was innocent, but when you consider what's happened in our country with this fatal virus, people unemployed, 40 million, what was your read on this? A little tone-deaf, detached from reality? Well, what did you make of these negotiations?
Tone-deaf, Steve, is the first thing that came to mind, and just insensitive. When you look at it, and well, why are you owning a professional team in the first place if you're not in it to enjoy watching the product play? If you own a baseball team, I'd want to watch them play. And for them to say that, I just think it was ill timing, insensitive, tone deaf, whatever you want to say. And we're starving for some semblance of normalcy. And having baseball, whether it's on TV or the radio, every night for 3 hours, can be that extension and give us at least some semblance of what it was like before this global pandemic was just ravaging the country and the world. So, and yes, we're a little bit more excited probably affiliated with the A's, because I believe the A's legitimately have a shot to win, you know, the American League, go to the World Series, and maybe win another World Championship with the squad that they've assembled and they're getting ready to play. And I just think it leaves a stain on those organizations, those fan bases, with that organization. You talk about the Cardinals, who are one of the most revered franchises, especially in their city, and certainly the Cubs and the lure of Wrigley Field, and they just need to be smarter. It was a dumb comment to make, especially on the heels of the new television deal with the postseason. And just completely the wrong time, considering what this nation is going through.
Yeah, it was completely frustrating. A couple final thoughts for Roxy Bernstein. You know, yesterday we woke to that horrifying news about Bubba Wallace. It turns out the FBI has launched this investigation. And regardless of what that was all about, I realize I'm walking the line of a stereotype here, but a sport that until a month ago had a connection to the Confederate flag, to kind of see the reaction of fellow drivers and crews and NASCAR itself, it's actually been kind of uplifting, coming from NASCAR, hasn't it?
It was very touching to see that. And the support, you could tell that Bubba Wallace was moved by it because of the support he got from his fellow drivers and all the pit crews that were there to show support and get behind him before the race. I can't imagine, Steve, what it was like for him Sunday night after he didn't see it, thankfully.
Right.
And then, you know, the news coming out today that it had been there and it wasn't necessarily that, and it wasn't directed at him. But can you imagine the emotions and what he was feeling Sunday night and knowing he has to race the next day? I just can't imagine what was running through his head and what the emotions he was dealing with and going through on that night after finding, or at least having the indication that this was a racially charged episode in his direction.
No, it must have been, if he slept at all.
Yeah.
One final question, kind of general about broadcasting. Assuming we get to a football season with no fans, you know, you mentioned the Gibson homer in 88, and Vin Scully tells a great story how Gibson took Eckyard, made the call, and then just got up to make a cup of coffee and let the crowd tell the story. So I was thinking when I was going to talk with you, let's say you're here in November for Ducks USC. There's no crowd. There's a pick six midway through the fourth to give Oregon the lead. Have you thought about how odd it'll be not to have the roar of the crowd to kind of emphasize your excitement and your call?
It will be weird because, you know, when before everything got shut down, I was slated to go for the Pac-12 tournament where I do the first couple of days with Don McLean, and we were supposed to call the Oregon-Oregon State game before everything came to a screeching halt. But earlier in the week, when news was filtering out for the Pac-12, I go do the Big West in the semis and championship for ESPN. And the Big West Conference was one of the first to come out and alter the plans, that they were going to have no fans in the arena at the Honda Center in Anaheim. So I was trying to just plan on how I would deal with broadcasting a game with an empty arena, no fans, and just the players and the referees and the game officials, and that would have been it. In fact, you know, one of my colleagues who I've become very friendly with over the years, I really look up to, and Dan Shulman, who I think is as good as there is in our business. And Dan called me on Tuesday of that week, and he wanted to know what I was thinking and how I was going to handle it, because he was hearing rumblings, he was getting ready to do the ACC tournament, that was a possibility for the ACC. And so we talked for a good 15 minutes, and I still wasn't exactly sure how I was going to handle everything, because the first thing, Steve, is you're going to be a little subconscious about some stuff you were going to say and nervous because you know everybody can hear it. So if I have to say something, hey, that was a bad call by an official, or what was this or that coach thinking, they're going to hear it right there, courtside live. Now, maybe I might get the grief later, you know, when they're watching or, you know, on the tape, or when somebody tells them, oh, you wouldn't believe what Roxy said about you. But they were going to hear it live and instantaneous, and I'm wondering, okay, will I get the death stare and the scowl from the referee or the coach after I make a comment? I was nervous about that situation because of everything that they could hear. But this is a little different because when you're doing a game, football, you've removed your way up at the top of Autzen Stadium or wherever, in a booth, and more than likely nobody's going to be able to hear you. But still, you're waiting for that big reaction from the crowd. And I do tend to lay out and get out of the way of those moments and let the crowd tell the story. But I can't because there's no crowd to tell that story. So even at this point, Steve, I'm not exactly sure how I would handle it because of we've never been through anything like this. There's no playbook for how to deal with a situation like this and calling a game in an empty stadium.
Well, maybe you could become the first play-by-play guy to get teed up.
Or, you know, we've seen people get thrown out of games, and I did not want that to happen from an official, but maybe we will pipe in audio like they're doing with some of the Premier League and the Bundesliga that's going on right now to give it a feel of a normal game. Possibly that might happen with stuff we do, and that could give me the avenue to lay out.
Well, let's hope we head in the right direction and have games to deal with. Folks, he is Roxy Bernstein, play-by-play man extraordinaire on Twitter. It's at Roxy Bernstein. Hey, glad to hear you and your family are doing well. I really appreciate you taking some time. And as always, it's been awesome catching up. And maybe, who knows, down the road we'll get to talk about football or basketball actual games, Roxy.
I'd love it anytime, Steve. Thanks for having me, as always.
All right. Take care, pal.